You're listening to episode 40, brought to you by PrepDish.com. For your free 2-week trial, go to PrepDish.com/lovely. Welcome to Cultivating the Lovely, the podcast for real moms who are seeking Jesus, trying to live their roles well, and seeking to add a little bit more loveliness to their life, even in just the little moments. I am your host, Mackenzie Monroe from BoldTurquoise.com and CultivatingTheLovely.com, and I am so excited to bring you guys this week's guest. She's a mom who, when she started writing about motherhood, she was still in the thick of it, but now she's got all of her kids out of the house, and she's got so much wisdom and perspective to be offering to all of us. It's Mary DeMuth. I have actually given away books of hers on the podcast before, and I'm so excited to be talking about this concept of how we're just ordinary moms, but we have an extraordinary God who makes up for our weaknesses and helps us all along the way. So let's just dive straight into this episode with Mary. Welcome, Mary.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
I am so excited to have made contact with you, which was actually through our mutual friend, Trisha Goyer.
Nice. She's awesome.
Yes, she is so awesome. And so, and actually, a year or two ago, I don't know, pretty early in the podcast, I had on Karen Ball and Aaron Taylor Young, and we actually gave away a copy of one of your books with that episode. So
that's awesome.
I know. I feel like you've kind of like been a recurring theme on the podcast without even knowing it.
Well, thanks for having me on. That's awesome.
So would you like to actually introduce yourself so people know who you are if they haven't heard of you before?
Sure. I am a mom to three kids who are now flown the coop, and which is a whole new world for us.
Yeah.
We were church planters in the south of France for a couple years in the
wow.
mid-2000s. So that was cool. We did that as a family. And I also have been writing and publishing since about 2004, 2005. So I've got about 35 books I've written.
Wow.
I'm a speaker, and I speak all around the nation and the world. And I also mentor writers toward publication. And so, but the main thing about me is I really love Jesus. And that's probably the thing I'd love to leave listeners with the most, is just Jesus is amazing.
Yes. And that comes so through in your writing. I'm super excited. Just the topic that we're going to be talking about today, which kind of spurs from an older book of yours. Did you say it was the first book that you'd written?
It was the first book that I wrote. Yes.
That's so funny because I'm reading it now, you know, what, like 10 or 12 years later. It's called Ordinary Mom, Extraordinary God. And it's so just, I mean, it's only 10 or 12 years, but it's just still so applicable. And every chapter, I love how they're short. So they're able for, you know, moms to be able to get those little bite-sized pieces that they need. But they always bring back to biblical truth. You kind of like remind us of how we should be acting and we should be living our lives. But then you remind us how like, but Jesus fills in those gaps. Like, it's okay. You don't have to try to do it all on your own.
Yeah. And it's impossible to do it on your own. And
yeah.
Even in my own story of, you know, the way I was raised is not the way I wanted to parent my kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I was basically just lost all the time. And the only way I became an okay mom, and actually I think in retrospect, a really good mom was this, reliance on the Holy Spirit and this desperation for Jesus to help me, because when you've had no example, your fallback is always what you've seen in the past, because we don't learn much by people's words. We learn by their actions. And so I didn't have it demonstrated, at least good parenting demonstrated. And so I just had to have a crash course from the Lord on how to love my kids. It was not easy.
Yeah. Well, and I think even for people who don't have the history that you have, I mean, my parents got saved when I was in junior high. So I feel like even though they weren't like, you know, the worst parents ever, you know, there was still like, they were learning along the way too. And I think that God has given me a lot of grace for them in that, like, hey, you were just doing the best that you could, but I still feel like we're trying to do things differently than they did. You know, every step of the way, there's relearning and there's new learning and trying to figure out how to parent in a changing culture and all of that. And I really, I mean, there's so many parts in this book. I was talking to you before we just started recording and just saying, like, even I made notes from the first third of the book, and there are more notes than I've probably had for any episode so far because it's just so packed with goodness. I feel like this is one of those books that I could read every morning alongside my Bible study and just kind of get that recharge I needed as a mom. Like, oh yeah, God gets what I'm going through right now.
That makes me really happy because I wrote it when I was in the trenches of motherhood mm-hmm. and when everything was so kind of busy and overwhelming. And at the time, the reason the book came about was I had been doing a weekly column for a local newspaper, kind of back in the olden days when there were newspapers.
Yeah.
And it was always about my family, and because it was that kind of a lifestyle column. And my literary agent at the time, I had been writing only novels. I thought I would only be a novelist. It's my first love, is writing stories. And my agent said, well, you really ought to write parenting books. And I just thought he was the dumbest person ever. And I kept rebelling against it and thinking he was, you know, crazy. But eventually he wore me down. And the result was this book and several other parenting books that I wrote after that. And so it was kind of I came about it kicking and screaming, but a lot of it was just ripped from the headlines of my own life and mm-hmm. my own need for Jesus in the midst of my own home.
Well, and I think it's just, he was so right in that it rings a bell. Like it hits so close to home, even just the title of the book, Ordinary Mom, Extraordinary God. I read that. I was like, okay, I need this book. Like I feel so deficient in so many ways, but I need to have that reminder, like, but he's got my back. And so I want to get into a couple of the points that you really kind of dive into. And I noticed were recurring themes throughout the book. And I think they're just so applicable. And the first one was about the importance of just quietness and rest to even be able to hear his voice.
Yes. And it's important. I remember one of the titles of those, of one of those chapters was Earn Your Stress Less Badge. And the Girl Scouts apparently have a badge called the Stress Less Badge.
That's so
and,
funny.
That just cracked me up. But then I thought about it and I was like, you know what? I would never be able to earn that badge.
Yeah.
I could earn the stressful badge, but
yeah.
not the stress less badge. But that has been a reoccurring theme in my own life. When we were parenting our kids in France, you can imagine just the busyness that we had all the time. So planting a church, I was writing full time, but also leading worship at this church, trying to learn French. Trying to live in a new culture, just like 20,000 things coming at us at once, and trying to love my kids through going to French schools and crying every day after school. I mean, it was just crazy. And one of the things that we did well and made lots of mistakes, but one of the things we did well was we decided we are going to do Sabbath.
Yeah.
We read the book, The Rest of God by Mark Buchanan, which I try to read every year. It's a life-changing book. Hmm. And we started inaugurating every Sunday as our day of complete rest. And all of our events up until the point that we planted the church were not on Sunday. So we actually could have a whole day off on Sunday. Now, for people who are in church ministry, that's the worst day to have a day off.
Yeah.
But for us, it worked out. And it has so changed our lives that my children, who are now 19, 21, and 24, cannot live without that kind of dead space in their lives. Mm. If their lives get too full, they see and they long for that day off. And so we helped create that holy rhythm in their lives. And now as adults, they're like, hey, I need to take the day off. And I'm so grateful for that.
That's so important. I was actually just talking about this on a pretty recent episode with Jody McKenna. And we were talking about trying to teach our kids how to have their own quiet time with the Lord and how that stillness is learned. Like, especially in today's culture, it doesn't just happen. You have to be very intentional about making that work in our lives.
Exactly. It's definitely something that will get usurped the first thing. It'll be the mm-hmm. first thing taken from your life. And I just read a recent book called Deep Work by Cal Newport, and another just great book about how so many of us are not doing deep work, deep thinking, deep theology, deep anything, because mm-hmm. we are so distracted. Yeah. And like, I have a book that I'm going to be writing in the next couple months that's due in February. And I already feel this extreme need to go away somewhere and be quiet and put my, you know, I need my head back on straight, and I need to have long extended periods where I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And in our distracted world, we're not. And if we're showing our kids that real life is, you know, instant messaging and, you know, Instagramming and all the instas in our lives, yeah. then they're not going to learn how to do deep thinking. And then our whole society will crumble, because we need thinkers in this world. We need people who can tackle a problem for long periods of time and think through it. So it's a very important issue.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think as I was thinking about it, because the book talks about some of these things, but some of them didn't even exist back then. You know, like there wasn't Facebook and Instagram and all these things that were popping up on notifications on our smartphones. But even just the things that you talk about in the book are still so relevant. I mean, even just, I think if I cut out all like the social media noise and all those kinds of things, just the basic distractions of, oh, but I have this to-do list that I need to do. And those are things that I think mothers from all generations have been plagued with like, there's so much to do, but I need to pause and actually listen to my kids, or pause and actually make God a priority. And you have to be conscious of it, or it's not going to happen. You say in the book, it's something, I don't have the exact quote, but it was that the Lord can be in our homes, but we aren't even aware of his footfalls because we just aren't taking the time to take notice of it.
Right. And so often he is seen on the face of our children, mm-hmm. and we experience God and we learn about him through the voices and the eyes and the viewpoints of our kids. And when we're distracted so much by that to-do list, we will miss that gratitude of finding God in those holy moments that probably look like nothing to other people, but are everything to you. And that's one of the things I love about the Lord. He's not, I mean, he is the God of miracles, but he's also the God of smallness and little mm-hmm. details. And I actually feel more loved by him when little details work out that I know he knew that I needed, but no one else knew. Yeah. Versus some grandiose answer to prayer, which is always great. But this was, you know, those small things, they matter more, but you have to be aware. You know, you see, hear that in Isaiah 43, God says he's going to do something new. He's going to put roadways in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. And he asks, will you not be aware of it? Mm-hmm. And that to me is the question to us in our busy world. I'm going to do new things. Will you not be aware of it? And part of it is just learning to slow down enough to be aware and choosing to be aware of it.
Yeah. I love what you say about that too, that it's those little things, because you mentioned in the book that he can redeem even our dailiness. Like, Jesus was a real man, and I think sometimes, especially as moms, I think maybe we feel like he can't relate to me, but you have a really good reminder in the book of like, he had 12 disciples who were kind of like large children and he was having to deal with them. And like, he cried real tears that turned to blood even. And he went through all these like daily struggles and lots of people needing him. And he doesn't mm-hmm. despise when we have that neediness in our lives.
Right. Very, very true. And important, mm-hmm. To remember. He does have great empathy for us because he's already walked this earth and he understands what, you know, the grit and the dust of earth is like.
Yeah. And I think it's so easy to forget sometimes that there's that humanity to him in understanding what we're going through.
Yep.
So I want to move now for a second and talk about not being too quick to judge our children. And I think this is another one of those things that is easier when we're more present with them. Like, if I'm really distracted, I'm more likely to get frustrated when my kid carelessly knocks over a glass of milk or something. But you talk about how we need to give them the benefit of the doubt in order to not blow up over these things that don't need to be blown up over, that were, you know, accidents or whatever. And can you talk a little bit about how that changed how you parent?
Yeah, I remember right before we were going overseas, we were at an orientation for, you know, staff, and they talked about in that orientation, they talked about a study out of the University of Washington that was a predictor, a really, really good predictor of how long a marriage would last or whether it would last. And the number one thing that they found was a predictor of marital success or failure was the spouse, both spouses assuming positive intent. And what that means is that when your spouse comes home late, if you're assuming negative intent, you'd be like, oh, they're probably having an affair, or, you know, they just want to not be around me instead. And then positive intent was, oh, he must have gotten stuck in traffic, you know, mm-hmm. and not get angry at him because for no apparent reason, where you're jumping to those conclusions. And I think that's really true with our kids as well. We can be so frazzled and fried, and that gets back to needing rest, that we are more apt to jump to negative intent and assign a negative motive to our kids when they just might be immature. They yeah. might just be young. They may just be acting their age. It's been a while since I've had a toddler, but I right now have a Labrador Retriever puppy, and it feels a lot like yeah. toddlerhood and teenagehood back in my home. And I have to remind myself, she's not maliciously chewing my cowboy boots, although it feels like yeah. she is, and I want to, you know, yell at her. It's her stage of life, and I need to assume that she will eventually turn out okay.
Yeah.
And not a psycho dog. But that's a kind of a funny example, but you get the idea.
Yes. All right, ladies, we are going to take a quick little break to talk about this week's sponsor for the podcast. Now, if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, you've probably heard about them before. It's PrepDish.com. But you guys, this is the season to get in with PrepDish. I am telling you what, you can get a free 2-week trial to be able to see just how amazing PrepDish is just by going to prepdish.com/lovely. You guys, I find PrepDish to be a savior, especially this time of year when everything is going full force. There's so much going on. I love knowing that I've already got all my prep work done on the weekend. I don't have to worry about doing it during the week and getting dinner on the table later than I want to. I can just slap a few things together and we're good to go. You guys, you really want to check this out. I really encourage you to do so. You could find that it's just the kind of savior you've been looking for. So go to prepdish.com/lovely, put in your information. They will email you 2 weeks of meal plans that have your shopping list and a full schedule of how you can prep everything in a 2 to 3 hour period that will just save you during the weeks and make everything so much easier. So why not give it a try and see just how life-changing PrepDish can be? Again, go to prepdish.com/lovely and you will get 2 weeks free. Make sure to use that lovely code so that you can get in there and they can know that we're the ones who sent you. So check it out. I know you're going to love it. Okay, so I think that assuming that they're, you know, they're not trying to be out to get you is one more way that God uses parenthood to refine us. And you talk about that quite a bit in the book that, you know, parenthood could be more for our own maturity than even for the kids. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd recently orchestrated a conference called the Restory Conference. This is our second one. And one of the statements I made in that was that relationships are God's avenue of sanctification for our lives. And that also goes for our children and our relationship with our children. And precisely that, because we definitely find out where our heart is by the way we snap at our kids, mm-hmm. you know? So I would definitely say that we don't grow apart from relationship. We may think that we do, and we may think that isolation works, but it doesn't. And the iron sharpening iron is very important, as well as learning to love your kids and also to love yourself and also to be self-aware about when you need to apologize to your children and mm-hmm. when you know, messed up, so that they don't have this idea that to be a Christian means acting perfectly all the time or covering up sin. And so I think the home is a perfect environment for sanctification if we allow it to be that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that, like you said, apologizing to our kids is such a big deal. Like taking that responsibility and that alone teaches them how to take responsibility for what they're doing. I have a son who is a particular struggle. I don't know. He's very, you know, fiery. And he does not let you get away with stuff. And I have noticed, like, the quicker I am to be like, because if you raise your voice at all, or you just, like, you catch him off guard, he gets, like, he is gone. Like, he is so far upset about that he feels, you know, that injustice so greatly that it's like, you can't get through to him at all. And I've realized, like, the quicker I can say, you know what, I didn't handle that right, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't have snapped at you, can you forgive me, and can we move on, the quicker he's able to bring it back down and not go further down that route of just being so upset with mom or dad or whoever. And it's such a humbling thing to realize, like, I have to, first of all, try to keep myself better in check, but then also just own it and just be like, you know what, bud, yep, I shouldn't have handled it that way. But it's helping him to learn how to do the same thing and take that responsibility when he does it.
Right. Because like I said earlier, kids are, they learn through what they see, not what they hear. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we should never say things to them, because we do. Obviously that apology would be something that is said, but our actions do speak louder than words, and they are watching us. We have these little humans trying to figure out life and navigate life, and they're watching their parents to see how they do it. That's how they learn.
Yeah. It's hard. It's so hard.
Yeah. It's super hard.
And that's why we need Jesus to help with it.
Yep. Exactly.
I liked the idea. You called it, like, your GQ, which I thought was kind of funny. In the book, you talk about the gratitude quotient. Do you want to explain what that means?
Yeah. So I was asking one of my children, I believe it was my oldest child, if she would do something. And she said, Mommy, I would be gratitude. And I thought, you know, that is, she was trying to say I would be glad to do that or happy to do that. But she said gratitude, which I thought, now that is a really great play on words.
Yeah.
You know, to just have that gratitude as glad. And, so that's where the GQ came from, is this idea of having this joyful, grateful, thankful attitude in the midst of your parenting and your everyday muck of life. And I wish I could say I was awesome and perfect at this my whole life, but I'm still trying to write those gratitude lists. In fact, the other day I was at a church and I was like, you know, I think I'm like on, you know, number 943 of my gratitude, but that was like 2 months ago. And I really need to add 944. It's been a while. So, I think it's something that's a lifelong learned thing that we have to keep cultivating in our lives.
Yeah, I agree. And so practically speaking, is that one of the ways that you do it, is actually keeping a list and trying to make that an intentional part of your life?
Absolutely. And that, it's just super simple. It's kind of like the 1,000 gifts of Anne Voskamp that she talked about. So once I'm past 1,000, I'll be like, woo. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to stop. But I think it just gets you in the habit of recognizing that today was blistering hot in Texas, but it was sunny and pleasant and the sky was pretty. And so you could always jump to the negative of, oh my gosh, this is supposed to be pumpkin spice weather and it's like watermelon weather.
Yeah.
It's ice cream weather. Or you could be like, you know, this was a beautiful day and I'm going to be grateful for it. So I think it depends on your perspective, and having gratitude alters your perspective from negative to positive. And not to be like a Pollyanna, because that really is not the way I live my life. I think we should be honest with each other and not just pretend. I used to have this mom friend of mine who is, she would always just, every time I talked about something, you know, frustrating or whatever, she'd be like, just choose joy, just choose joy. I just choose joy all the time. And I wanted to smack her.
Yeah.
Like, just shut up. I don't care about joy right now. I'm sad. So I'll be real and honest. But there is, you know, there is a kernel of truth in there. If you can make a decision to find something good about your day.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Because like you're saying, you want there to be authenticity. And I mean, the Bible even says that we're supposed to, you know, be joyful with those who are joyful and mourn with those who mourn. Like, it's just, it's frustrating when people can't just like get where you're at. but then it's also so important to be able to try to, you know, adjust your perspective, just like what you were saying. On the other end, for us, we went from 98 degree weather a week ago to it was 51 today and rainy. And so it's like, okay, here's fall, here we go, which is totally typical of the Northwest. But we've had fires surrounding us so immensely that the smoke and the air quality has just been terrible. And so for us, it's been like, yay, it rained. Like, we can breathe again. It washed all the smoke out of the air. And where normally I'm not, like, typically super excited about this kind of weather. Even with my kids, we've all been like, oh, thank goodness for the rain, because we've had such a drought and now we can breathe. And so it is thinking about those things, just like, but what in this, what good is this seemingly, you know, frustrating situation or whatever? What can it produce later on? And sometimes that's not always apparent. Sometimes we have to ask God what that's going to be.
Yeah. And sometimes we just have to have faith and we don't know.
Yeah.
And we can be in bewildering circumstances and it won't be years until we understand. Like, one of the things I thought about, even related to this book, was I'm so grateful that that book didn't become some crazy bestseller, because I don't know that at the time my soul would have been okay with that. I don't think I was mature enough to be able to handle any sort of modicum of fame. And God's been very gracious not to give me any fame for these past 12 years or so, which is great. You know, he knows things that we don't know about ourselves, or we think we're capable of things. And we ask him, well, why didn't you send me that circumstance that I really wanted, or that lucky break or whatever? And, but we don't understand ourselves even as he understands us. So we have to have that faith. And then there are other circumstances in our lives and in our parenting too, where we might not know this side of heaven.
Yeah.
We will perfectly understand one day, but we might not know on this earth. And that's where the tension comes in life, which you just have to entrust it to a faithful God who's going to carry out his will, you know, despite our questions and our confusion.
Yeah. And it's like so many people that you see throughout the Bible that God promised things to, like Abraham, who he never got to see the fulfillment of what was promised to him. He had to go to the grave knowing, like, okay, I've had one kid, but God said I will have, you know, nations that are from me, you know, and we just might not, we might not see now what we're pouring into our kids, what that's going to become, or how that could affect future generations. We still have to be faithful.
Yeah. And my husband and I call ourselves pioneer parents because we're first generation Christian parents. And so that even becomes even more interesting to me as I think about the holy stake that I put in the ground and said, not on my watch, we're going to do things differently.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking, you know, the generations before me, now that pattern has ceased. And now what does this mean for my great grandkids? You know, that my children were raised in a Christian home and that they learned about Jesus. Now, what does that mean for generations to come? Will one of them be a mighty leader someday? I don't know. It's very exciting to think about.
Yeah, it's so exciting to think about. So, and that kind of moves me into, we talked about this a little bit with our maturity, but you point out in the book how God is closest to us when he's pruning us, just like a gardener is closest to the plant when he's pruning it. Would you just talk about that for a minute? Because you read that and you're just like, oh, that's so good, but that's so hard.
It is so hard. And I am a gardener and I do prune things. And you're right. I cannot be far away from something and prune it because I need to be able to see the junction of the branch. And I need to be able to see if I'm cutting off the right thing to make the tree or the shrub thrive. And that's how it is with the Lord. And, you know, that pruning comes out of John 15, where he prunes perfectly good, seemingly good branches so that we will bear more fruit. And it doesn't feel very good in the moment, but there is that nearness. If he's pruning, he's close. And if he's pruning, he's taking notice of us. So it's just really a good, it's a good thing to remember that, I think especially when it's bewildering and we feel like a little Job-like and things are being taken away from us and we're trying desperately to say he gives and takes away, but blessed be the name of the Lord, but he is near in the midst of that. And part of that goes again back to the first thing we talked about, which is rest, mm-hmm. being quiet enough to hear him, being quiet enough to hear, well done, good and faithful servant, even on this side of eternity, and to just know that his delight is in us. It's super important.
Mm-hmm. And I did make a note in my notes about one of the verses you mentioned in the book, which was Isaiah 30:15. And it says, in repentance and rest is your salvation, in quietness and trust is your strength, but you would have none of it. And mm-hmm. we have to, like, that one just hit me like, oh, it even back then for them, like they wouldn't rest either, even though God was telling them, this is how you will be able to get through this. Yeah.
Those are seven scary words, but you would have none of it.
Yeah.
And I think those are seven words that the Lord is saying to the church today, and we need to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly. It's just so easy to push God to the side. I think it's so easy to skip our Bible time and skip, like, even I homeschool, and it's like, oh, but we've got all these, you know, subjects that are mandated by the state that we need to get to, you know, so we better just, mm-hmm. you know, skip Bible time today or whatever. But really, that should be the cornerstone that everything else is coming off of in our day, in our homeschool, in our parenting, you know, whatever it is, that's where it needs to be rooted.
Exactly. And, you know, if you live in the Northwest, you've got such beauty around you. And mm-hmm. so that even can be simplified by walking outside and saying, yeah. isn't God good? Look yeah. what he made.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, again, that being aware, like taking the time to see him where we're at. So I did remember a question that I thought of a few minutes ago, and then I couldn't remember. So you talked about thinking deeply and how that's so important that we do that so we can pass that on to our children and teach them how to do that. But do you remember when you were in these, you know, more trench-like times of motherhood, mm-hmm. how you were able to do that in your life?
Oh.
Way back then. 10 years ago.
It's just so long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Let me ask you how you've done it, and then I'm going to think about how I've done it.
I feel like I'm still trying to figure it out, but I think narrowing my focus a bit has been helpful. I've been trying to, like, I'm an ENFP. I don't know if you're into the whole mm-hmm. Myers-Briggs thing, but
yeah.
I'm very like, oh, look at that thing. Look at this thing. Let's do all the things. Mm-hmm. And so I have had to try to teach myself to say, like, okay, I want to learn about this specific thing. And for right now in this season, I need to say no to doing all the other things or all the other creative pursuits besides my main, like, doing my podcast and just right. doing those couple of things. And so, like, my kids and I were going through early American history, and I wanted to learn mm-hmm. more about that. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to read this biography, and I'm going to take the time to read it well and really get this grasp on history that I haven't personally had before. I didn't feel like I got that great of an education, and I want to know it now as an adult, where maybe I didn't care about it when I was younger, but I really want to know it now. And so doing that and just taking bite-sized chunks. Like, this biography that I'm trying to read is a massive tome. It's huge, but, and the print is so teeny tiny. Oh my goodness. It's Hamilton by Ron Chernow. And I may only get a page read. I may only get a page read a week, but mm-hmm. it's the, like, okay, no, but this is, I'm not going to commit to trying to make my brain wrap around anything else during this time, except for what we're learning in history, and I'm doing it alongside mm-hmm. my kids. Or even with our Bible time right now, I've mentioned this on previous episodes, but with Trisha, actually, she's doing a year through the Bible, Bible 365, with her new book, Walk It Out. And just having those 5 chapters of the Bible that I'm reading every day and not trying to get too fancy with it, and, like, because I would be that person like, oh, I should go buy, you know, a K. Arthur Genesis Bible study that will take me an mm-hmm. hour every day to do with this. And, like, that's not reasonable for my life right now. And so just trying to say, like, okay, it's just 5 chapters a day. And if I just read it, that's good enough. But if I can go through and highlight some things and ponder things more deeply, if I have that time, great. But just get it read. because at least I'm in the Word.
So, right. That's so important. I think one of the advantages I had when my kids were younger was that we weren't in Internet 2.0 yet. We weren't doing Facebook. And in fact, it was really, really rudimentary. And so I didn't have I was just writing in obscurity. And for a decade, I wrote unpublished words for a decade, and I wrote in the margins of my life. And that was my one thing I could do, you know, kind of for myself. And that was my one focus besides, you know, my kids. And I didn't have the pressure that a lot of moms today have of, well, I've got to have a blog. We didn't even know what the heck that was. And I have to have an Instagram account, and I've got to post all this. And I think that that kind of level of distraction makes it even harder to focus on one thing at a time or say no to something. And especially if someone is wanting to be a published author, and then there's this added stress of having a platform and, you know, doing all the things. And so I was just a little bit lucky, in that sense, but, like you, it's better for me. I'm an ENFJ, so I'm pretty close to what you are.
Yeah.
It's better for me if I choose one thing at a time, or I, you know, like I tackle a project at a time instead of four or five. That being said, I also have, shaken hands with myself to know that I'm a high producer, and I'm actually really joyful when I get a lot done. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I thought that was bad. Like, you're supposed to not get a lot of things done because it's like negative or bad, or you're too much of a workaholic or something. And that can happen, definitely. And it's happened to me before. But now that I know who I am and that God's designed me that way to produce a lot, I, within the parameter of a workday, I get a lot done, but I also learn when to say no. Mm-hmm. So I think the people listening today that might be frustrated and be like, well, I'm not supposed to be an achiever. It's okay to be that way. Just be sure that you have rest in the margins, and that that doesn't have to necessarily define you. It's not your identity, but it's okay to be wired a certain way. Maybe some of you are slower and you need to think through things before you do them, and you don't just simply react and run here and run there. And that's great too. And we need folks like that in the world, probably way more than we need people weird like me.
Yeah.
Shake hands with yourself. Yeah. Shake hands with yourself and know your limitations and don't apologize for them, but just, you know, have some self-care, take care of yourself and be kind to yourself.
I think those
and stop comparing yourself to other moms.
Yes. Yes. That's so important. I think that's something that knowing your personality types and whatnot is really helpful for, because you can then kind of see in more of a black and white way, like, oh, well, she is just different than me. Like, I have a different skill set. I have a different way of doing things. And we, like you were saying, we need all of that in the world.
Yep, we do. Yeah. We need all different kinds of people. And God made us all different, which is so glorious and wonderful and such a blessing. And yet in our society today, we're starting to become more, we're jumping into camps and we're labeling folks, and it makes me sad because of the beautiful diversity that God created, even in the physical nature of the earth. I mean, how boring would it be if everything was a desert, or if everything was mountains and we had no, you know, valleys? We need the wide variety, and that even helps us as parents, because, you know, of course, every parent that has more than one child, their natural assumption is that child number two is going to be like child number one, and they are not at all like each other. Even if they're the same sex, it's never that way. So
and even
this
just
biodiversity, I mean, is in our homes.
Personality wise, that's like so absolutely true, but I didn't even expect it. Like, even physically, like, God made my kids all so different. Like, looking at their faces, you would know, like, oh, they're all in the same family. But if you look at their bodies, like, my second of each gender are super tall for their age, and my first of each gender are like average to small for their age. It's like, what happened here? Like, how are my younger kids catching up with my older kids? It's so bizarre, but God just puts this uniqueness in all of us, even with the same gene pool.
Right. So it's good for us to embrace that instead of fight against it.
Yes. Absolutely. And I think that's a good place to kind of wrap up our podcast episode. So now I'm going to ask you the question that we will both answer, and that is, how are you currently cultivating loveliness in your life?
Ah, such a great question. I think for me, it's been to go outside and see it and smell the air. And, my puppy, as frustrating as she is, she forces me to take her on walks.
Yeah.
And I think that has been really helpful. And I notice that when I'm not outside, my mood gets sad.
Yeah.
So it's really good for me to find beauty. And even though I take almost the same route every day when I walk her, or when I'm running, I really have a similar route of running, I always notice something different about the nature around me that helps me to go, wow, okay, this is really cool.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Just, yeah, taking notice of those things and being out in the nature. I know, even just, we went to Taekwondo today and my kids were walking to the car. They were like, oh, it smells good because it had rained. It was like, yes, it does. I'm so glad you noticed. So my current thing that I am doing to cultivate loveliness in my life is I'm actually preparing to go on a trip next week. So by the time this podcast comes out, I will have been back from the trip for a couple of weeks. But it's a very rare opportunity for me. I'm actually flying across the country, which I have never done by myself. And I'm meeting a friend that I met online, and we are going to a homeschool conference together. And while I'm equal parts, you know, like intimidated and excited, I know that God's going to use it in some really amazing ways. And I'm going to get to meet a lot of people that I've only met online and actually be able to, you know, hug their necks and look in their eyes. And so I'm just doing kind of all the prep work of trying to get everything ready at home and prepare for that conference so that I can enjoy it to its, you know, fullest. So I'm very excited.
I think you're going to have a great time.
Yes.
It'll be great.
Me too. I think it's going to be super fun, and it's going to be a jam-packed 3.5 days. But man, I'm going to make the most of it.
That's awesome.
Okay. So now I have some questions that I ask all of my first-time guests that are just fun things. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Candles or an essential oil diffuser?
Candles.
Okay. Cloth napkins or paper?
Cloth.
Okay. City or country?
Country. My husband wants to live in a high rise somewhere.
Oh my goodness.
Like, dude, do you know who you married? That's not going to happen.
Paper or digital?
Paper.
Okay. Shopping online or in the store?
Online.
Amen.
Easier.
Yeah. Especially with kids in tow.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely.
Yeah. It's 4 o'clock or whatever time you make dinner and you need a mental break. Do you listen to a podcast or to music?
Music.
Okay. What's some of your favorite music to listen to?
Right now it's been just kind of worship music from all over the place and all different kinds of venues and types. So just kind of random worship music.
That sounds nice though.
Yeah.
Okay. Chocolate, milk or dark?
Dark.
Okay. Sports or no sports?
I would say medium in the middle of that. Okay. Probably no sports if I was going to have to choose one.
Okay. Live broadcasting. Would you rather broadcast or watch?
You mean if, like, I was going to do it?
Yeah. Like, would you rather actually go on Facebook Live or Periscope or something like that? Or would you just rather watch other people who have done it?
Oh, no. I'd rather go on myself.
Okay. What is your favorite movie?
I would say right now, because I have like 7,000 favorite movies,
sure.
It would be Sing Street.
Oh,
have you heard of Sing Street?
I haven't.
Oh my gosh. It's on Netflix.
Ooh.
People need to watch it. It's amazing.
Okay. What's it about?
It's set in 1985 Dublin, and it's about this kid who's getting bullied, and he decides to form a band, and he kind of goes through all the 80s style of music, which is kind of fun. But it's a love story, and it's just really sweet.
Aww.
Really great show.
I will have to look for that. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you were to put yourself on the crunchiness spectrum where 0 is totally not crunchy and 10 is like completely crunchy, singing Kumbaya by the fire with dreadlocks in your hair and your legs unshaven, where would you be on the crunchiness spectrum?
Well, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest,
Okay.
so I'm going to get in trouble, but I think I'm more like a 7.5.
Okay, that's a very respectable answer.
My legs are shaved. I'm
Yes.
just going to put that out there.
Knock a couple percentage points off.
Yep.
Mine are
My,
too,
I don't
so
have dreads.
yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I just feel like it was packed with so much wisdom. I need to go back and like take notes on my own show. So thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for this week's episode, you guys. Be sure to check out the show notes if you want any of the details about the things we mentioned in this episode. You can find them at boldturquoise.com/40. And be sure to also go over and check out the sponsor, prepdish.com/lovely. Get that 2-week free trial and see what it can do for you guys. Also, if you would be so kind as to leave ratings and reviews in iTunes, I would so deeply appreciate it. It really helps iTunes to know that, hey, we've got this podcast thing going on and people are interested. Helps other people to be able to find it. And I'm so grateful to all of you who have done that and will be doing it in the future. So thank you so much. All right, ladies, I think that's all for this week. I hope you are encouraged. Until next time, go be bold and gracious.